Brady Saar, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services, Erskine. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Sierra Doctor and Whitney Pittman. Northern Plains will see one more round of well-organized precipitation over the next 10 days. World Weather Incorporated says that will occur next Wednesday through Friday, adding to the moisture in an already greater than usual snowpack, increasing the potential for significant spring flooding. Temperatures are expected to remain colder than normal, reducing snowmelt and increasing the possibility of a rapid snowmelt once those temperatures do finally warm up in April.
The latest flood outlook from the National Weather Service says there is a greater than 65% chance of major flooding at Oslo and Fargo-Moorhead on the Red River and a high risk of moderate flooding at Wahpeton, Halstead, and the Grand Forks area. The Weather Service says moderate flooding can be expected along the Cheyenne River, Maple River, Buffalo River, and Wild Rice River. Minor flooding is currently expected along the Red Lake River at Crookston and two rivers at Halleck.
Dry weather in eastern Brazil will likely push harvest progress. World Weather Incorporated says Paraguay as well as Paraná and Goiás were mostly dry Thursday, while a mix of rain and sunshine occurred elsewhere. Rains are also expected to be infrequent enough over the next 2 weeks to allow for rapid harvest progress. Central and northern Argentina will see frequent waves of rain over the next 2 weeks, providing additional relief from drought. World Weather says south central Argentina will miss much of the rain through Monday, but the region has enough moisture to support developing crops. Better rains are expected in that region beginning next Tuesday, with more follow-up rains beginning next week Friday.
AgWatch Market Advisors President Dewey Strickland says short covering has the wheat market leading the grains here today.
So here to when you look at wheat over the past couple of days, we've had a pretty sharp sell-off here. And also, too, in the Midwest, we've recently had some temperatures in the teens. And I have noticed where there's been some burning of the wheat from the freeze there. And guys I talked to are just a little bit uncertain about what kind of damage they can be looking at. So, yeah, wheat's leading it here today.
And the livestock market's also seeing some short covering.
Cattle market, also like soybeans over the past 10 days or so, after we set the contract highs, been under some pressure here, and we're getting a little bit of a rebound here. And I think it's just more or less just the lack of selling in the market more than anything else, and pretty well the same thing goes along in the hogs too. Hogs have had a huge break here over the past week, and so I think we're just seeing going into the weekend, you know, some of the professionals and others are taking some profits.
Some of the headwinds facing the grain markets stems from the outside markets. AgriSampo North America Chief Analyst Sterling Smith says European economic concerns are a factor in the grain markets.
There is issues with the European banks, and if anyone reads my weekly wrap-ups, I will have charts and coverages of both American and European bank CDSs. They are moving noticeably higher from major banks in Europe, including outfits like Deutsche Bank, and that is creating a lot of market nervousness right now.
Smith says that it's pushing stocks lower.
We're down about 1% across the board in the S&Ps. We're seeing interest rates back up, coming down on this sort of nervousness. It's pushing the dollar higher. But interestingly, gold is moving higher, and that is a little bit of a contradiction. We don't usually see that. Interest rates are down noticeably this morning.
Auction barns are at the tail end of the feeder run. NDSU Extension livestock economist Tim Petrie says prices were as good as he expected.
We had a really nice increase in feeder cattle prices here this year, and it was expected. This was the fourth year of cow liquidation, so smaller calf crop. And then one thing that did enter in here is that we did, you know, has been wet. All the western U.S. has been very, very dry. But the western states have gotten rained off too much in places, and and in through Colorado and so on. So that helped to spur the market, too, especially for the lighter weight cattle to go on grass this summer.
Petrie says the grass cattle market was looking up before bank complications threw in uncertainty.
You know, we're really, really good up there at $200 or so. They've fallen off now here in the past couple of weeks. Fed cattle have kind of struggled a little bit, and you know, a lot of issues going on there. The banks closing has kind of, you know, put a question mark on consumer demand and so on. So, but still, this is the highest prices since 2015, and probably on the fed cattle side, it looks like we're going to set record highs, even higher than 2014. Not so much on feeder cattle because of corn, but the feeder cattle are still hanging in there this week at auction markets. They were strong again.
Major livestock groups have signed off on a letter to House and Senate Agriculture Committee leadership showing support for legislation to allow livestock market owners to own or invest in small or regional packing facilities. The farm groups call this an outdated rule, and more must be done to increase packer capacity and add competition for producers. The letter was signed by the American Farm Bureau, American Sheep Industry Association, Livestock Marketing Association, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, National Pork Producers Council, and the U.S. Cattlemen's Association.
Antitrust concerns were raised when Tyson gave 60 days notice to suppliers that it would shut down a Virginia poultry processing plant. Compliance with antitrust regulations would require 90 days notice before ending a contract. Tyson says the company is not canceling any contracts and instead has committed to paying farmers for the full term of their remaining contracts, keeping them in compliance. Farmers were given notice by phone on March 13th and May 12th before closing. Others say legality could still be in question as the plant will stop processing birds before the 90-day window closes. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Expanding animal agriculture in North Dakota has had a lot of attention in the state's legislative session. House Bill 1371 was heard in the Senate Agriculture Committee and would expand ownership options for animal agriculture operations. North Dakota Department of Ag Policy Advisor Dutch Bialke says this bill would be beneficial to agriculture.
Even with these many more requirements and limitations, it will be placed upon ELFs, of which limited liability companies and corporate farms do not have. This proposed amendment to the North Dakota Century Code would be a huge positive step forward in the promotion, advancement, and growth of the North Dakota's animal agriculture industry. This proposed amendment, developed over a huge expanse of time, is clear, consistent, and most importantly, balanced and workable for our state's livestock producers.
Several agricultural organizations testified in favor of the bill, including North Dakota Farm Bureau, North Dakota Stockmen's Association, and Bialke says this would help strengthen the state's economy.
This 2023 modernization bill is all about boosting animal agriculture in North Dakota, and it'll permit dairies and livestock feedlots and swine and poultry production to flourish and create economic engines that will bolster our state's economy and help revitalize our rural communities. The Agriculture Commissioner strongly supports and respectfully recommends the passage of the revised version of the first and gross version of House Bill 1371, the North Dakota Animal Agriculture Farm Freedom Act.
North Dakota Farmers Union remained neutral on the bill while the Dakota Resource Council spoke in opposition, saying it would open doors to large confined animal feeding operations that could be harmful to the environment.
Rabobank dairy strategist Mary Ledman has been announced as a guest speaker for the Central Plains Dairy Expo. Ledman says her focus is on opportunities in the dairy industry.
So when we look around the world at global milk production and exporters, there's the European Community, the 27 member states plus the UK. They produce about 60% more milk than the U.S., and they account for 30% of global dairy trade. You look at New Zealand and Australia, while the amount of milk they may produce is less than 5% of the global total, they are major exporters, and particularly New Zealand, 95-96% of all their production is exported.
Ledman says the U.S. has freer environmental laws, which allow easier expansion.
In the U.S., we account for about 15% of global dairy trade, and it's growing. Our share in global dairy trade is growing, largely because the U.S., we really don't see those same type of environmental constraints hindering milk production growth. And in fact, some of the solutions to less carbon and to, for smaller greenhouse gases in the U.S., some of those solutions really are being driven by size and scale of U.S. dairy farms.
According to the Dairy Market Report, the dairy margin coverage is paying $1.56 per hundredweight for $9.50 per hundredweight coverage for January. From December to January, the average all milk price dropped by $1.60 per hundredweight. That's tied for the 10th largest monthly price drop since January 2000. The bump in soy meal costs represents two-thirds of the margin decline. Corn and premium alfalfa prices also contributed to change.
NDSU Extension Cropping System Specialist Greg Andries says, in a summary of the past 12 years of sunflower soil health research, no-till appeared to be more beneficial to yield.
Simply comparing the yield with conventional till compared to no-till. And very simply, by going with no-till, we have not seen a decline in yield. We've maintained our yield, plus all the benefits of no-till. We also have some work with strip-till. Simply comparing strip till, the operation performed in the fall, and compared to conventional till and then direct seeded as well. But the story, again, is very simple. We do not lose yield by reducing our tillage operations.
Andrew says salt-affected soils is a concern for many sunflower growers.
In 2020, I don't think things have changed any. They've likely gotten a little worse, even, on the number of fields in our region that do have concerns with salt-affected soils. Those areas, more the eastern half of North Dakota and northwest Minnesota, and there's some other scattered areas in the region as well.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Let's catch up with Ag Week reporter Jeff Beach. Jeff, what do you have for us on the cover of Ag Week?
Well, we're talking with a couple of livestock leaders in Minnesota who are talking about how to kind of keep the target off their backs from environmentalists about climate change and what the livestock industry is doing proactively and the conversations that they're engaging in to participate in kind of the climate change discussion.
Do you go into some of the things that they're working on?
Yes, we talk a little bit about some of the things that they're working on, some of the goals that they have. A lot of it is about, you know, kind of how people in the beef industry, the dairy industry, really just need to be a part of the discussion and not just kind of bury their head in the sand about, that climate change isn't real, or even if they have issues with maybe some of the science or some of the claims that they still need to be involved in those talks.
Sure. Seems like, too, they seem to have to fight a lot of misinformation at times, too.
Right. And so really arming yourself with good information, good talking points is kind of one of the other duties that farmers have to take on these days.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jeff, sounds interesting. Looking forward to reading about it next week's Ag Week. And let's catch markets here before we leave at this noon hour. 15.5 higher in the Minneapolis May wheat, 8.56 and three quarters. Chicago May wheat's up 25 and three quarters, and Kansas City is 26.5 higher. May corn, 10 and three quarter cents higher at 6.42.5. December's up 6, 5.58 and a quarter. May soybeans, 10 and a quarter higher at 14.29 and three quarters. November's up 16 and a quarter at 12.74 and a quarter. In Winnipeg, May canola, $9.90 a metric ton higher at $745.10 Canadian. April live cattle up 95 cents. April feeder cattle down 10 cents. And April lean hogs $1.65 higher. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This is the Red River Farm Network.